Your skin is clammy. There's grit behind your eyeballs. A solitary owl hoots. The world lays creepily silent.
Children of the night.
Then a shadowy figure emerges from the darkness.
The problem is 99% of the planet doesn't know who he is.
Who is that guy?
A rebel. A guardian of everything that's fair in this dog-eat-dog world. One man with an opinion, a studio hotline, and powers to kill.
Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Out of the ball. Around Australia on the Triple M Network.
Triple M!
Welcome to The Night Shift with Luke Boner.
Yes, it's Sam Dastyari filling in still for Luke Boner across the Triple M Network, 87 stations across the country, 133353. We will be taking your phone calls all through the night. Now, tonight we've got the amazing Jess running the show for us. It's Sam Dastyari here. We've got Lockie on the controls.
Good morning, everyone.
And we've got Ev out there, Evelyn out there giving us a hand too.
Hey, everybody.
133353. We will be taking your calls all the way through to 6 a.m. in the morning. It is Sam Dastyari. I'm filling in for the very talented and very brilliant Luke Boner, who I might also add is the very well-rested Luke Boner at the moment, who has taken 2 weeks leave to recharge his batteries, spend a bit of time with his family, and focus on the things that really matter. But look, incredible amount of support here from the Triple M Network and from the Triple M family. And Luke, if you're listening tonight, we miss you. We want you back as soon as possible. For those who don't know me, it's Sam Dastyari here on the lines, a disgraced former Labor politician who I'm happy to talk politics. Look, I get it. I get that no one out there on the Triple M Network likes politicians. I get that no one likes ex-politicians. I just want to be completely honest. I hate Me Too. I hate Me Too. Now, a couple of topics I'm very keen to talk about tonight. And please give us a call. Look, you can call us about anything, really. We're happy to talk to everyone. We've got our regulars that call in. We've got people that call in from time to time. New callers that call in for the first time. 133353. Now, a couple of topics I'm very keen to talk about tonight. And please give us a call. Look, you can call us about anything, really. We're happy to talk to everyone. We've got our regulars that call in. We've got people that call in from time to time. New callers that call in for the first time. 133353. We've had some very interesting calls in the past few nights. People calling in with their love stories. People calling in with their killer stories. People calling in with their stories about living off the grid and living in huts up on the kind of mid-north coast of New South Wales. We've had a lot of really strange calls and really interesting calls as well. 133353. The weirder your story, the stranger, the more random, the more we'll enjoy it. Now, a couple of topics that I'm very keen to get us kicked off with today. And firstly, is this whole issue about quitting your job. Now, I'm not just saying this because it's my fourth night here. And, you know, I don't know if anyone realizes this is my fourth night in a row working with Jess. And these kinds of things make you, you know, consider big decisions, like perhaps quitting your job. But has anyone here ever actually quit their job? Have you ever walked in and told the boss they can get screwed? How did you do it? Was it a good idea? And also, if you didn't do it properly, would you like to go back and do it a different way? Is there any way you'd like to go back and tell your boss, you know, screw you, get stuffed, get lost. This is how I want to get rid of you. 133353, I want to know the story about the best way that you quit your job. And also, I want to know about your worst ever consumer experience. We're going to play a little bit of video for you a bit later, or the audio of it at least, about a McDonald's drive-through customer who attacked a manager over missing ketchup in the United States. What I want to know is, have you ever really lost it? Absolutely freaked out and lost it when it come to customer service? Has anyone lost it at you? Have you worked in customer service? Have you worked in retail? Have you had the world's worst customer who treated you like absolute garbage? 133353. I want your best retail stories. And finally, look, this is the one that's going to excite me a bit tonight. Last night, we got deep into the night talking about serial killers. And I got to say, I got home at about, you know, we finished up at 6 a.m. yesterday, stayed here for about an hour or so, got home, got to bed about 9 a.m. in the morning. And all I did, middle of the day, have the worst nightmares that I've ever had. Lockie, did you get any sleep last night?
I got a little bit of sleep. Got a little bit, but some of those stories yesterday, they were over the top, meeting people, being in contact with ex-killers. It's, our listeners out there are wild.
Yeah, yeah. Our listeners out there are freaky. Our listeners out there are a bit freaky. Jess, did you get any sleep last night? Ev, what about you?
Yep, got some sleep, ready to go.
Yeah, but you're like a machine, Jess. You don't give a shit. Like, you don't care. Like, there's no emotion there. It's just a robot, right? Like, we're going to be talking about any issue here and just go home at 7 a.m., switch off and go to bed. Some of us are feeling the pain here.
You're a bit scarred from the serial killer stories.
I'm a bit scarred. Ev's a bit scarred. Evelyn, you're a bit scarred still from last night, aren't you?
She's a bit scarred. She's just on the phone, but she told me she was feeling a bit rattled. They were creepy.
They were creepy. They were really, really creepy. 133353. Now, I'll tell you what we want to hear tonight. Okay, I'm going to do something a bit different. I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I really don't. I spent a lifetime in politics. I spent many years in parliament in my kind of 20s and 30s. I've been briefed by security agencies, all this. I haven't been one who's really believed in conspiracy theories in the past, but prove me wrong. I am prepared, Australia, to have a very open mind to whatever conspiracy theory you want to call up with tonight and plug. It might be chemtrails, it might be 9/11's an inside job, it might be a very, very Australian kind of conspiracy theory. You know, hey, if there is a flat earther out there, and that means someone who believes that the earth is not round, 133353, I want you to call in. We are going to, I want to hear your side of the argument. 133353, conspiracy theory open line tonight on Triple M. Give us a call. Tell us your conspiracy theory. Now, I've got a couple of lists here, and I'm not going to go through them now, but a few I'm going to mention. But there are a couple of, there's a couple of very Australian conspiracy theories out there that most people might not be aware of. The one I love is that Area 51, you know, the Pine Gap area in Australia is actually just an extension there of that whole kind of, you know, Area 51 in the US. And the Joint Defense Facility of Pine Gap is, which we all know, as a matter of fact, is a secretive facility in Alice Springs that's run by both the US and Australian government. And no one really goes on there. But there's a conspiracy theory that's an underground city for the elites getting ready for when the world is destroyed, that it's researching alien technology and creating a death ray. 133353, some even claim the site exists in the third, fourth, and fifth dimensions. So I am really keen here to hear your conspiracy theories. You know, look, you might have an issue with chemtrails. You might have an issue with fluoride in the water. It might be kind of 9/11 was an inside job. There's quite a few out there. There's the Illuminati. There's the lizard people. We're going to give you a complete open mic here tonight, and we're going to have a complete open mind. 133353. You're on the night shift at Sam Dastyari, filling in for the past 2 weeks, or well, this week and next week, for Luke Bonner across the Triple M network. Now, Smokey, how are you?
Hey, mate, I'm good.
Mate, I love the nickname. Before we get anything else, how'd you get a nickname Smokey?
It comes from my last name. My footy coach gave it to me when I was playing footy as a kid, and it kind of stuck.
Okay, I was going to say, I was going to assume it was because of all the pot, but sure.
You know what? A lot of people do, and hey, it's carried off into my adult life, you know? Legalized marijuana, Commonwealth government, looking at you. Anyway,
All right, no, well played, well played. No. Now, tell us, you got a video you want to talk to us about.
Oh, yeah, okay. If you go on YouTube and do a bit of digging, you'll find it. So this is, I was going to quit a job, and I didn't end up doing it, but this was the idea I was actually going to go with, because I watched a guy do it, guessing from the States. So what he did was he hid in a hallway with an entire marching band behind him. His boss walks around the corner and goes, okay, all of you need to leave. And his response was, I fucking quit. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's right. That's okay. No. That was an accident. We might have.
Yeah, my bad.
I actually have the audio of that.
We have the audio of that here.
Smokey, is this the video you're talking about?
Jared, I'm here to tell you that I'm quitting.
Oh, Smokey, how good is that? Okay, so he quits his job and he has his entire, I think it's his high school mariachi kind of marching band there with him that he gets to come out and just celebrate the quitting of his job.
Yep, that's the exact video I was talking about.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, and it goes on and on. Okay, 133353 across the Triple M network. Smokey's pointed out this great social media kind of YouTube video. Has anyone ever quit their job like that? Is that the best quitting you've ever done? Three, we're taking your calls, conspiracy theories, how you got sacked, why you quit. But the real issue, like Jess, I think what people really want to talk about is who wants to take me fishing or hunting?
Yeah, not many people have come forward. We're not going to sugarcoat it here, Sam.
Hey, no, I'll tell you what the problem is. It's because we actually have a full board of calls, which we have all night, every night. The problem is, there's actually too many people waiting to talk to us. So these people who want to take me out, like on holiday and that, just can't get in.
No, we haven't had any of those. No, they know our social media. They know where we live.
Oh, no, by the way, yes, the social media, Facebook, The Night Shift on Triple M, Twitter, MMM Night Shift, email nightshift@triplem.com.au. And we have a podcast?
Yes.
I wasn't aware of this.
What do you think I do? I'm a
really?
Busy gal.
Really?
Yeah.
You want me to tell you
Your
what I think
voice.
You do?
No, I don't want you to tell
okay,
me.
Okay. 133353 across the network. We're here on The Night Shift.
I've got a question for you.
Go for it.
What is this outfit? Why are you in a tuxedo? No one's here. You're in an empty building. There's about four of us. Four and a half on a good day.
Okay.
And red shoes. Is that a mistake?
No, the red shoes are very funky. Okay. So those listening, for those listening, I agreed to do this show to fill in for Luke, which Luke very, very kindly offered to allow me to do, a decision that Triple M clearly has already begun to regret. When I kind of said to fill in, I had an event on tonight, which was a Man of the Year Awards night.
You weren't nominated.
I was not nominated. No. I wasn't even a filler. I wasn't even one of those. No one even said to me, you know.
You weren't like a seat warmer.
I think I was a seat warmer. I think that's exactly what I was. I was the guy, you know, stand in the corner, and when someone goes to the bathroom, they go, sit there in case the camera comes. But I was there tonight. So, yes, I am. The event was still going. Like, the awards were still being given out when I kind of did the runner.
No one noticed.
No, I wasn't up for anything. And so I ran in here. Obviously, we're on tonight. I've got a change of clothes. But yes, for those listening across the country, I am in a full tuxedo right now. But I might say I have very, very funky red shoes on. We will put a photo of it up. Hey, what are you complaining about? Luke doesn't wear a tuxedo in this place.
He definitely is never close to a tuxedo.
133353. We got a full board of calls.
You're doing well. I want to ask you something else though.
Yep.
Is it okay to give your partner or a potential partner a list of rules they must abide by? Because a woman has put it up on the internet. She's just renewed the list of rules for her husband, and she has been slammed online. So annually she redoes them, rejigs them.
Whoa. Every year she puts out a list of what her rules are for her husband.
She just tweaks them depending on what's going on. So this is 2018's list of rules coming into 2019 for the new year. No female friends.
Okay.
No social media.
Okay.
No male friends with partners. They must only be single men.
Yep.
Must work a minimum of 50 hours a week. No smoking.
Okay, the no smoking one I'm more okay with than the others. But hang on. Okay, everything else aside, I mean, they're just stupid rules, right? Like, that's just setting someone up to cheat on you. But putting that aside, right? The rule there that says only male friends that are single.
Yes.
They're the worst.
That's what I was thinking. Aren't they more dangerous? But I think she's so threatened by other females, perhaps.
I'm at that age now, you know, I'm in my kind of, you know, mid to late 30s now. My friends who are single now are single because they have gotten divorced or broken up with their partners. They are the loosest units imaginable.
Yeah, you're like reliving your youth, except now you have money.
Yeah. Tell me, do you give your boyfriend rules?
No.
You guys don't even live together. That's not even a real relationship.
Oh, come on. We're going through this again. It's still
we're going
a real
through
relationship.
This. It's not a...
We're committed.
No. I'm sorry. Look, You live at home with your parents still.
Proudly. It's such a wog thing.
It's like such a wog thing, right? But you're living at home with your parents at the moment, right? I get that, right? I understand. And he's at home with his parents?
Yes.
Okay. And he's got his HSC this year. He's finishing high school.
I'm not a cradle snatcher, Sam Dastyari.
I just want to know.
You are here to clean up your reputation. You continue to plummet yourself further.
It is 1:40 a.m. I'm filling in for Luke Bonner across the Triple M network in a tuxedo.
Tuxedo. Right? What are you doing?
In a tuxedo.
Yeah, so don't judge me. Like, check yourself first.
All right, we're across the nation. We're taking some calls. Hey, Kev, you there?
I'm here, mate.
Mate, hey. Hey, Jess, listen to this. Kev's got something to say. What are you saying, Kev?
Oh, I could take you out shooting at a range.
Mate, that sounds fantastic. See, though, because Jess didn't believe anyone, you know. Jess was giving me a hard time. She was saying no one cares. You said, oh, let's go fishing, let's go shooting, let's go this and that. No one was prepared to do it. And, Kev, you've just proved Jess wrong. And there's a little victory in that for everybody. Now, hey, where do you shoot? What kind of shooting do you do?
Hunting, but I haven't been out for a long time, but I get out to the range every now and then.
Okay, and where do you go? Where do you go shooting?
Well, I'm in Brisbane, so it might be a logistical nightmare to get you here.
Mate, surprisingly not hard at all. Hey, Kev, thank you so much. Thanks for the offer. Very kind of you.
Well, if I can give you 3 tips if someone does take you out.
Yep, give me the tips.
Rule number 1.
Yep.
Always ask to see if the weapon is loaded before they hand it to you.
Yep.
Rule number 2, always point it in the safe direction once it's in your hands.
Yep.
Rule number 3 is don't put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to shoot.
Okay, that sounds like some very, very sensible advice. And I think the fact that you're brave enough to give me an automatic weapon or any kind of weapon at all, I think that's rule number 4. Yeah, don't give Sam anything. Anything. Have you Googled me? Are you crazy? But Kev, thank you so much. Now, we've got Jeff here. Jeff, tell us your conspiracy theory.
Well, it's a conspiracy theory that dates back a lot of years, and it refers to Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun.
Yep, which one? Is this the one testicle one? Because I know about that one.
No. Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun's body, which was supposedly burned outside of...
Outside the Führer bunker. It was the Führer bunker at the Reichskanzler. In Berlin.
Yes, they weren't actually their bodies. They were actually two lookalikes. And he was actually taken out of Germany 6 weeks before the war ended via submarine off the north coast of Europe around to Brazil and into Argentina, where he lived until the ripe old age of late 90s before he was died and buried in a pauper's grave in the middle of the forest.
Okay.
And it is actually being tracked down now on a show called Hunting Hitler, and they've actually found the paper evidence to prove that this actually occurred.
Now, there is actually quite a lot about this. I think there's a Netflix special or two about this kind of as well, and that's that the kind of theory that effectively Hitler got away, went to different places. Now, there's one that is like an Antarctic version. There's one that's obviously a Latin American version, and that he was there until he died in, what, like the 1970s or so?
88.
88 is the kind of, based on that, the theory of kind of when he died.
Yes. And this guy actually digging into it on this show called Hunting Hitler has actually found a paper trail leading all around the world to where he actually died in Argentina. And he's actually supposedly closing in on where he died.
Well, where the what I know, and I think this is a matter of history, is that actually Stalin was always himself very skeptical of the theory that Hitler was kind of murdered, you know, or kind of committed suicide, with the kind of accepted theory of events, and that they actually he got the Russian military to do its own kind of big investigation. At the end of it, you know, they came to the conclusion, obviously, that that you know he had been kind of killed there. But Stalin himself, the story goes and the theory goes that up until his own death, never quite trusted that Hitler didn't actually get away. And I think there's, you know, look, when you look at some of the other, you know, leaders of Nazi Germany, Eichmann, others who kind of were able to flee to Mengele, others who were able to flee to Latin America, it's not, you know, there's a lot of theories out there you get that seem really far-fetched, right? They kind of, you know, the whole lizard people or there's this or that. You know, there's ones that you kind of go, okay, that seems a bit too far-fetched for me. But the one that, you know, that they actually staged it, that the bodies were, you know, that they used kind of fake bodies. And again, we're going back to a period, this isn't today, it's not CSI, where you've got this kind of amazing kind of DNA technology that's able to determine it. It was really just based on half a dozen iCount events of people who were either absolute Hitler loyalists or themselves soon died afterwards.
Well, that's it. This guy has also found Eric Eichmann's grave, who supposedly died in Germany, and he's also found Mengele's grave.
Now, Mengele did flee, and I think that's known. Mengele went down to, I think this is a kind of a known thing. I think it was, oh, someone will correct me here. My understanding was Bolivia from memory, but I could be wrong about that.
No, he actually found his in Brazil.
Brazil. It was Brazil. Yeah. But it, you know, it is quite remarkable that as many of them that did were able to actually get away, and that kind of link between Nazi Germany and some of those kind of regimes in Latin America is a really kind of complex nexus. And you mix in with that the sheer amount of gold and other kind of, you know, assets that went missing. I find it hard to believe that those assets are kind of sitting in some kind of a, you know, den somewhere that were forgotten about. I think it's much more likely they were just stolen, you know?
Yeah, they were stolen. And the other thing is with Hitler's skull, no one has forwarded DNA to compare to Hitler's skull if it was actually his skull or somebody else's. DNA has never been compared to that skull. It's just an assumption on eyewitnesses.
Is that just because they don't have the DNA?
No, he's still got a couple of relatives over in Germany. Nieces and nephews and that. But none of them have ever gone forward and offered their DNA to do a comparison.
Okay. Wow. What a fascinating kind of theory. Again, we're just having an open mic conversation here tonight. We're hearing what, you know, different people have got to say, what different theories are out there. Jeff's talking about the conspiracy theory about Hitler. And again, this is one that I think there's a whole bunch of documentaries on everything on YouTube, but there's certainly, I think even Netflix has one or two, or either Netflix or Stan's got a couple of them about this at the moment, which I think is quite a fascinating story. Hey, Jeff, thanks so much for sharing that with us. Now, if you don't mind me asking, what keeps you up at 2 a.m? Are you at work or on the way home?
I'm just finishing work.
What kind of work?
I'm actually a taxi driver on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland.
Oh, beautiful part of the world. Beautiful part of the
world. And I'm finishing early because my beautiful 17-year-old daughter graduates high school tomorrow, my youngest.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Jeff, huge. Come on, give him a round of applause. Huge congratulations, Jeff. That's an amazing achievement. So she's 17. She turned 18 this year or next year? How does it work?
Next year in Queensland. They graduate at 17 here and turn 18 next year.
Oh, fantastic. And so she's on her way to schoolies?
No, she doesn't want to go to schoolies. None of my children wanted to go to schoolies.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeff, you know I went to schoolies twice.
Let me guess, schoolie the first time, toolie the second?
Yeah, that's right. The third year was getting a bit of a stretch. Jeff, thank you so much for calling and thanks for sharing that the Hitler story.
Not a problem. Have a good night.
Thank you. Hey, Pete, you there, mate?
Yeah.
How are you?
Oh, g'day, Sam. Sorry, I thought that was your producer. Sorry, mate. Yeah, good.
Yeah, I thought it was Jess. You could tell people always mistake Jess for I because we both have deep masculine voices, so.
Hey, just a couple of things I've been listening to tonight. I mean, that's a little bit absurd to think that Martin Bright didn't kill those people down in Tassie. I've read a little bit of that conspiracy stuff, and they've never put any reasons forward as to why the government would actually want to disarm people, other than the fact that he actually did it and he killed people. There's witnesses there that said he was kneeling down just going pop, pop, pop. So, I mean, there's a ton of witnesses that just override all of that sort of stuff. And he admitted to doing it himself. It's just crazy. It's the most insane theory I've ever heard is that he didn't do it. And we all know that there's more handguns in society now than what there ever was, mainly because obviously it's totally illegal to have. And once you ban semi-automatics and handguns and that type of thing, well, people just get him in anyway.
Yeah. No, well, one thing you're right about, though, the bit of that theory, again, I hadn't heard that theory before tonight, to be honest, Pete, so that was kind of the first time I'd heard of it. You said that you mentioned that you kind of heard a little bit of it a bit earlier, but look, the government kind of acted, and how John Howard, the Prime Minister at the time, acted, and he acted quite boldly and quite firmly, but not, I mean, there was some reluctance there. Right, they paid a huge, like, it wasn't a politically easy thing to do. The National Party was obviously quite concerned about it. It wasn't an easy thing to do. I don't quite accept the fact, having worked around government and in government, that, you know, if you're going to believe a conspiracy or a stuff-up, it's normally a stuff-up. Like, conspiracies like that, that these things get planned and this and that. Mate, government can't organise anything. Right? Government's hopeless. Do you know how well organised you have to be to organise something like that?
Look, it was a very easy. It wasn't an easy thing that they did. We had the Vitkovic killings. We had the. There was another couple of mass murders that were in there. Of course, Martin Bryant, and the guy at Hoddle Street as well. I mean, the minute we took the guns off the people, that stopped because the guns weren't there. It's ludicrous to say that he didn't do it. But look, the theory that the one that I've read so much about, and there's so much proof to actually prove. Lee Harvey Oswald did not kill JFK. JFK was killed by a combined effort between the CIA and the mafia. There's so much evidence to support this. Yeah. I mean, first of all, his wife is crawling out the back of the car once his head got blown off, right? The Zapruder film shows his head getting blown out the back, right? And she's crawling out the back of the car away from the gunshot, which is in front of him, right? There's a guy named Clay Shaw. Now, he was brought to trial over this.
Yeah, it's the JFK. Movie.
I don't know the movie about it, that sort of thing. But I read the two books on this, and the evidence is so strong. There's a judge that did not allow certain evidence to be heard in that trial that would have convicted this Clay Shaw for conspiracy to kill JFK in Lafayette Street, New Orleans. They just had all these pseudo-fuzzy little offices where they. But they worked, and look, there was so much involved in Cuba. You know, the mafia were. You can just see how the mafia money has funded this. The CIA couldn't go to the government, and they went to the mafia for it. The mafia got JFK up. He won Pennsylvania by the slimmest margin ever. The guy who we defeated was Richard Nixon.
It was Nixon.
And
he was in Texas, which was where LBJ was from, who ended up taking over the presidency from him.
Absolutely. Nixon had said he's going to come down hard on... They got the wharf in Baltimore and New York. A guy named Lucky Luciano was patrolling all this in jail. And when he was kicked out of the U.S., he came back...
Lucky
to
was
Cuba.
At the time the head of the Fine Families. They used to call it the Commission when he was there.
He ruled the commission, he came back to, not to the U.S., but he came back through Cuba. All of his business interests were in Cuba. Fidel Castro got in and stopped all of the gambling that the mafia had set up. Now, the mafia then basically put JFK in. The Gambino family, which was then the head of the Five Families at the time in the 60s. I mean, they had people at the polling booths, and they were forcing voters to vote for JFK. None of that was, you know. And so the mafia said, our money got him up. Then he puts his brother in.
Yeah, as Attorney General. Pete, where I'm kind of fascinated by this, and the bit for me in the kind of JFK conspiracy, the bit for me that always seemed really dodgy was the Oswald suddenly getting shot, you know, within 24 hours of the president getting killed, you know, that whole kind of incident with him getting shot, you know, saying he's a patsy before he can give any evidence, before he can actually, you know, put anything down on record. It all just seemed, I've got to say, I mean, you know, as far as conspiracies and go and kind of conspiracy theories go, whether or not, you know, Oswald did or didn't have a role, I mean, I'm not an expert on any of that, but it just, I personally find it hard to believe that all those things could happen with just a lone gunman, with, you know, considering how complicated his history was, considering his relationships. He spent time in Russia at the time. There's these weird meetings that Oswald had that never got fully explained down in places like Mexico. You're right, you had the whole kind of Cuban connection with the mafia. It's just, I don't know. It, personally, if there was going to be one conspiracy theory that to me never really, you know, made sense, it was always going to be the JFK one. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Well, we've got Jeff on the line. Jeff, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. How you going, mate?
I'm fantastic. It's, you know, it's 3:45 in the morning. I'm talking to you. What more could you want out of life?
Just wanted to put something across about
the
conspiracy theory. Yeah, I come from Rosedale in Victoria. I'm in Sydney at the moment, but back when guns had to be bought back.
Yeah, when there was the gun buyback, 1997.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, and after that.
After Port Arthur. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I went to the rally in Sale, which is not far from Rosedale, Sale, Victoria.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Where John Howard went there and wore the bulletproof jacket and all that stuff and talked to all the farmers and the shooters and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so when the guns got bought back, I went to the place where you had to drop them off and I had all my paperwork. I had a shotgun and a 22 Ruger 10 shot. And I handed the papers over and the person said to me, these guns, we haven't got a record of them. I said, well, here's the paperwork.
Really?
And he looked at them.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
said, we haven't got a record on them. And I said, well, here's the record. They're registered.
Yeah, of course.
So anyway, he said, oh, it doesn't matter. We'll buy them back. And they actually gave me hundreds of dollars more than what they were worth. And I was happy enough with it. And being a small town, I knew the person that was running the buyback place where they were handing them back. And I told him about it, and he said, look, I'll tell you this, that this is why the buyback is happening, because the government have lost 3 to 5 years of gun records. And he believed that the only way that they were going to find out who's got guns and who hasn't is have a buyback.
You're saying the buyback was about them actually getting the kind of trying to work out, like they lost all the documentation beforehand.
They'd lost all the documents, 3 to 5 years of documents of who owned the guns in Victoria and everywhere. And it could have been all over Australia, I don't know. But he told me this is the reason, because when the government, Howard, asked, well, how many guns are registered, blah, 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 in Victoria, Australia? And they come back with, we don't know.
Okay.
And I've always had that theory that is why the buyback happened, because they did not know who owned the guns.
Well, Jeff, we have a huge network of people, 87 stations across the country that listen here.
Yes.
If there's anyone that knows a bit more about this. So Jeff's saying that he was told back in the day, at the time when the gun buyback was going on, that they'd actually lost a lot of documentation, lost a lot of information. Here's one thing I know. There's a lot of people out here who listen to this show. 1-333.
Yeah. No, well, like I said, I had the paperwork and the bloke said, oh, yeah, this all looks good, but we've got... He had a book with all the names of all the gun owners. Yeah, it was on the computer. And he said, look, I don't know what's happened, but anyway, it's all right. Here's your money, couple of $100 extra than what I'd paid for them. And I just walked out, and that's what I said to the bloke that I knew that was running it. He said, that's why the government's doing it, because they've lost all the records now.
Jeez.
I've always believed that. And
Look, I don't know, but let's see. 1-333-53. Let's see if anyone has a little bit more information on all that. But Jeff, now thank you and thanks for holding on. Sorry, you know it's a very very busy show.
Yeah, well, I've driven from Rural and I'm in Sydney now at BP at Eastern Creek. I've already stopped for the night, so
perfect.
I'm happy with that. I would just like to put a cheerio out for all the Red Star drivers all around Australia.
Okay, Red Star, cheerio.
Red Star, cheerio and goodbye for the night.
Jeff, have a great night. Have a great sleep. Take care, mate. See ya.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Now, we got Jess here. Jess, it is day 4. Day 4 of us doing this. How are we going?
This is a dream.
Is it?
Working with you is blissful.
Yeah, you just say that. Why are you laughing every time you say that?
What? Oh, I'm just a happy person. Happy to be around you.
Now, I know what happened last night, right? Last night we read the top, five top pieces of hate.
Yeah, there's been a bit of hate mail, Sam, towards you.
Yeah, so last night we read the five pieces of hate. Tonight we're going to read the five nicest things people have said about me, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so these are the five nicest things that people have bothered to write in and do. Are we ready?
Number five, Triple M, how did you let this filthy politician run the show? Won't be listening to this show ever again. You've lost me.
Number five. Okay, and that was the fifth nicest thing someone said.
Yeah, it's positive.
Okay, good, that's as positive. Yep, that's a positive one. Yep.
Michael.
No, what number is this one up? Number.
This is number four.
Number four, yep. So this is going to get more positive?
More positive.
Okay, great.
I just turned off when I heard that little weasel on air. Will not listen to this liar.
Okay, that's number four. That's a bit more positive. That one just turned off. The one before said they never listened to
this
station ever again.
We've lost them ever again.
Okay, so it's getting better. Number three?
Number three, Craig, when is Luke back? I'm counting down the days on my calendar because that's when I'll be back. Goodbye.
Okay, that's even more positive.
That's nice. He's coming back.
He's coming back. This one even admitted they were coming back.
Yeah.
It's going great.
Well, at least he's got Triple M on his calendar.
Yeah, that's right.
It's positive.
That's right. At some point, he's coming back to the show.
Number two, I won't listen until Luke is back. Sam is rubbish. And Jess, you could be doing a better job.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So you have, Sam Destiari has dragged me into his reputation.
Okay.
Absolutely tarnished.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
So why is that number two? Just because it was more positive because we got spreaded.
Well, yeah, now there's equality between us. I'm on your level. You dragged me to your platform.
All right. Do we have a drum roll? Can we do a drum roll? All right, ready?
Number one, Jared. I have absolutely no respect for Sam Dusty, whoever he is. He is not radio material, but Triple M, there is time to right this wrong before all your listeners are gone. Luke had such a massive build-up for this fill-in. My God, talk about a letdown.
Oh, okay. So that's the nicest thing we've gotten.
That's
because,
the best, yeah.
And why is that the best? Because they're actually...
Because this one's all on you. I don't want to be, you know what I'm saying? This is your responsibility. You've ruined the show. You've lost our listeners.
All right. That was the five nicest things that people have said about us on air.
It's chirpy.
It's chirpy. That was very chirpy. Yeah. No, this is really good.
Yeah.
I think this is a really important segment we've started just because, you know, let's be honest. I think sometimes, you know, bring me down to earth a bit.
You need to really, I don't know where you are. You're in the heavens somewhere with that ego and that pride. I'm just reeling you in with the rope.
Across the nation, you're on the night shift, Sam Dastiari, filling in for Luke Boner. Across the country, Triple M. News you are now waking up to. Police have seized $100,000 in drugs headed to the Gold Coast ahead of schoolies. Let me just let that figure sink in. $100,000 of drugs have been seized. Just imagine the sheer quantity of drugs that must be getting through if just one dealer's segment, one section, one component of it is $100,000. The drugs they found include packaged ice, cocaine, MDMA, LSD, cannabis, and a few other drugs, not to mention firearms as well, all of which they believe were on their way to schoolies. Now, I have to say, there's got to be some people out there who would, you know, who have been to schoolies like I have. Look, I went to schoolies twice. Jess, did you know that? Twice. I went to schoolies twice. Do you know what that makes me?
You definitely went as a toolie.
That makes me a great party animal.
Or a disgrace. Oh, you already are.
This is just getting mean. Look, the schoolies, and this is kind of going back in the early, late 90s, early 2000s, there was a lot of alcohol. There was a real drinking culture. And I wasn't really into it, but I think there was a bit of kind of, you know, low-level marijuana and that kind of in that scene. But the idea there's ice, cocaine, MDMA, LSD, you know, has schoolies just gotten, is it getting wilder? Is the drug kind of culture in these kinds of places that these kids are facing getting stronger and harder? Or are we only just starting to hear about it for the first time? 133353, I'm keen to get your thoughts, keen to get your calls. What on earth is happening at schoolies when $100,000 of drugs are being seized? Hey, you know this entire story about the Bunnings sausage that has just, for some reason, taken Australia by storm. It's kind of, it was the biggest story online for day after day. Well, now it's gone international. Jacinta Ardern has raised the Bunnings sausage sizzle with Scott Morrison. Australia, Bunnings, go home. Yeah, you're drunk. Dreamworld inquest continues in Queensland. Now, this has been kind of an issue that's gone on. Well, it all relates to a horrific incident that happened over a year ago with a ride that resulted in the death of Cindy Lau, Kate Goodchild, her brother Luke Dorset, and his partner Ruzi Aragi. And really what's going on, the investigation, what's happened, and every bit of information that has continually come out just raises more and more concerns about it all. An email tendered at the Dreamworld Inquest reveals staff had actually asked for the four-step shutdown of the ride to be reduced to one step, and the delay in shutting down the ride has been criticised throughout the inquest, really saying that, you know, this is one of these errors that shouldn't have happened, didn't need to happen, and could have really been avoided. 133353, Bourke Street attack. Now, the security guard who was stabbed in it has said today that the stabbing was apparently for no reason. The 26-year-old security guard who was stabbed in the neck by terrorist Hassan Shai Ali on Melbourne's Bourke Street last week says he tried to defend himself, but there was just too much blood. In an interview with the Victorian Police, the security guard Shoddy, who only wanted to his first name used, said Shai Ali came out of nowhere. Quote, after that, everything was just very quick. It was just a blur at the time, he said of the attack on Friday. Everyone was screaming and running. Then out of nowhere, I got attacked. Look, the more we hear, the more worrying it is. We've had quite a few callers about Bourke Street over the past week or so. And look, I'm just always keen to see, hear what people want to say. Now, they're the headlines that you're waking up to. The My Health Record deadline is being moved to 2019 in what can only be seen as a schmozzle of an implementation. The deadline to opt out of the My Health Record will no longer be Thursday night after the federal government agreed to 2.5 month extension. And look, it was unavoidable when you ended up seeing what inevitably was a system that couldn't hold it and a website that kept crashing as people tried to exit the system. It's Sam Dastyara. You're on the night shift. They're the stories you are waking up to this morning, filling in for Luke Boner across the country. Now, Jake, tell me about School is Hell. And did you go?
I've been 6 times.
Wow. Six. Okay. From what age to what age? How old were you when you started? How old were you when you ended? Or are you still going? Are you going this year?
No, not going this year. I started in 2010. That was my school is year.
Yep.
And then from then, we kind of went through the nightclubs that I worked at. We kind of ran a few parties up there every consecutive year since.
Oh, and okay. So what were you doing? What kind of parties were you throwing?
Just like kind of nightclub parties with like DJs, celebrities, things like that.
Oh, that actually sounds good. Hey, so this story today, right, about the kind of drugs and the drugs the police then have seized. Now, look, I went in the early 2000s and I went twice. There was a lot of alcohol, there definitely was, and there was some low-level drugs. Like I think there was, you know, a little bit of kind of marijuana and maybe, look, not in my scene, but there might have been a little bit of kind of ecstasy in that. It was kind of that period where that was quite big. But this idea of ice and cocaine and MDMA and LSD, I don't know, how wild was it? Was I just living in a little bit of a kind of, I don't know, sheltered part of it?
No, I feel like the year that I went in 2010, like I've got a pretty big group of friends, and I don't think any of us really got on any drugs. There was no drugs like in the clubs. We didn't see it. Then the year after when I went, and even the year after that when I went, there wasn't really a big drug presence. The third year that I went, ecstasy tablets started, you know, coming over the bar and a few things. So we were a bit taken back on that one because we just hadn't experienced it in the previous 2 years. And then right up until last year, definitely the drug culture has skyrocketed.
You reckon it's changed? You reckon it's actually gotten worse?
I just think young people these days, they have more knowledge of what drugs do, and it's more open and accessible. So Like when I was 18, there was no chance I was going to get my hands on a bag of, I don't know, cocaine or something. But now, man.
Well, Jake,
the schoolies was pretty wild last year.
Jake, 6 times, that's got to be a record. I don't know if anyone out there can beat it. 1-3-3-5-3. Hey, Michael, you there? How are you, hey, mate, how now? Where are you at? Are you at work? You're on your way to work? You sound like you're out and about, kind of at a train station or something.
No, I'm just on my way to work.
Yeah. Okay. What's work for you? What kind of industry you work in?
I'm just a driver, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. Hey, now, mate, you used to live on the Gold Coast. So tell us, what did it used to be like?
I'm talking about, like, back in 99.
Yep. That was around when I went. Yeah.
20 years ago, and like the drugs then were like pretty common. I reckon there was a lot more around then than what there is now.
Okay, you reckon there was? Okay, I'm fascinated by this because I may have just missed it. But because the story out today, which is the police seizing all these drugs that are headed to the Gold Coast ahead of schoolies, your take is that it was that bad or was as bad back in the past?
Well, it was a lot cheaper back then.
Yeah.
Like you could buy just about anything on the Gold Coast, anything you wanted.
Okay. Well, Michael, thank you so much. Thanks for the call. 1-3-3-5-3. Is Michael right? Has it actually, look, is it just, I don't know, to what extent is it just, have we just gotten to that point now where, you know, because there's so much media, because there's so much attention, because there's so many kind of stories and online and social media and Twitter and Facebook, that we actually have a much more warped interpretation of it because we see all the bad stuff? Or has it actually changed? Has it gotten worse? I'm very keen to hear what you've got to say. 1-3-3-5-3. Stavros, you there, mate?
Yeah, I am.
How are you?
Good, thanks. And you?
I'm really well. I'm fantastic, actually. It was a very, very interesting night. The words "open up the mics and tell me your conspiracy theory" led to some very, very strange calls. I take it that you just woke up now. You're on your way to work?
Yeah, I am. Yep.
Okay. What kind of work do you do?
I'm a CNC machinist.
A CNC machinist.
Yeah, toolmaker machinist. Yeah, right.
Okay.
We're in a factory.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. No, I wasn't sure what that was because I was thinking of the CNC factory, which was bad music from the mid-90s. I think. And, okay. They're all laughing at me now, and I don't think in a good way. Now, Stavros, you want to talk about Bourke Street? Tell me.
Oh well, not so much Bourke Street in particular, but it's those types of people. What? This is how. Well, I don't know if I'm seeing it wrong, and you've been a politician, perhaps been around a bit more, you could justify their reasoning. But they say, oh, he's on our watch list. We were a bit nervous he was going to go over and fight for ISIS, so we cancelled his passport. Well, I reckon let him go. Just don't let him back in the country. Or if he's radicalised or he's got this thought, and they said, oh, he's a flight risk, he might go over there and start fighting. Let him go over there. Why hold him back here and then does what he does here? If he wants to go and fight, let him go. Just don't let him back in the country.
Look, that is what you're saying there is actually a view that quite a few people have. And a couple of nights ago, we had the former head of Border Force, Roman Quadvalley, kind of call in, and we had this long conversation with him. And he was actually raising exactly what you're saying and saying, there's a policy problem here. Right? Because they had this problem with foreign fighters. And the problem was them coming back. Right? But I mean, if your view is let them go and you can never return, then there comes an element that says let them go. Because a lot of the ones that went, it's horrible and tragic, but they died, right? Like people end up, it was horrible, none of us supported and we don't want this, we don't want that. But then the kind of concern also, the opposite concern becomes that, hang on, sending them over, you're letting them go, you're letting them go fight. Who are they going to be fighting? They're going to be fighting, in many cases, Australian and, American and British and other kind of troops in the civil conflicts over in those places, especially with something like IS. They're going to be fighting troops that are being trained by us.
But they're going to be fighting people with weapons. He leaving here, he's fighting innocent Australians with no weapons. Like, at least if he's over there in a war zone, he's going to be fighting people on the same level, if you know what I mean. Leaving him here, I know it's hard to determine if he's going to do any damage if he's left in Australia, but I just struggle to see, well, if that's what they want to do, let him go.
Okay, Don't so Ross, back. Would you let him ever come back? Would you let him ever come back?
No.
Okay, because the hard one is that when the war is over and the conflict's over, like the ones to the foreign fighters, do you let them then come back into Australia?
Well, it's either that or you've got to be watching them anyway. Yep. If they're left in Australia, if they don't go over, you're going to be on a watch list. They're going to be watching them anyway. If they do, perhaps the war's over, they do come back, put them back on that list. I mean, they're still going to be on the list anyway.
Yeah, but Stavros, no. But the difference is this, right? And look, I honestly have a strong view on this, that if you go over and you're going to go fight and you're going to go fight for, you know, a cause like that, then perhaps there is no space for you in Australia ever again.
Oh, I agree. Right? I agree 100%. Yes.
Because the danger is that it's not a matter of just putting them back on watch list when they come back. If they come back, they have then been trained, right?
Yes, correct.
I mean, for whatever, please, I don't want anyone to take what I'm about to say the wrong way. As horrible, as vicious, as brutal, as awful as these terrorist organizations are, and they're all those things, they are schools for training people in how to be radical. They teach people how to make bombs.
Yep.
They teach people how to make weapons. They teach people how to kill. Yep. And the other thing they do is they're experts at desensitizing people to it. You know, you look at these footage, right, of chopping off someone's head and doing things that are so gross and disgusting. That doesn't happen on day one.
You
build up to that. Now, Stavros.
No, I reckon that's right. If they leave the country, that's their opportunity. They've decided their future. Yeah, they don't come back. I agree.
All right,
get them out of the country.
1-333-53. Call in. I'm here to see what other people have to say. Hey, Stavros, thank you so much for giving us a call this morning. Now, Craig, you there, mate?
Yes, g'day. How you going there, Sam?
Mate, I'm fantastic. So you reckon the drugs have become worse? Tell us why.
Okay, well, I'm not a young man, but I've started working in clubs and things in the last few years.
Oh, fantastic.
Mate, and I have to do a toilet check every half an hour to an hour when I'm in a club.
Really?
Yeah, mate, yeah, because you find sachets on the floor.
Just like empty kind of packets for like what, pills
little
and
packets,
cocaine and what else?
Yeah, cocaine. Cocaine's the one that seems to have taken over the whole Gold Coast.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Okay. So,
and they don't seem to be young, and all the young guys are on it. You go out and you're having a dance and you realise that you're the only person who's not on something making you go fast.
Okay. So tell me, what are they like when they're on it? Like from a security perspective, like is it worse than booze? Is it like...
No. So they're better than booze.
It's better than booze.
So that's probably why it's been allowed to sort of sneak in.
Okay. Putting aside, neither of us are doctors or experts. I don't want to get into the debate about, you know, the health benefits and health and, you know, this and that, psychology and all the impacts and other horrible side effects of this. If you're a security guard and you know someone is drunk off their face or high on cocaine, which one would you rather deal with?
I'd rather deal with the guy on the cocaine.
Wow. Okay, that is fascinating. Mm. That is actually really interesting. Hey, Craig, are you coming home from work or off to work at the moment?
I've just finished, mate. Yeah, I've just finished.
You just finished at the club. All right. Well, we're still going here, mate, because we actually work here. You know, we're putting in proper hours. Thank you so much.
Yeah, your job is a lot more relaxing than my job.
You have no idea. I have to work with Jess here in the studio. Trust me, it's terrible. Across the country, Triple M Network. You're on the night shift. Thank you so much, Craig. Triple M.
Shift with Boner Away, Destiari will play. Sam Destiari, filling in for Luke Boner around Australia on the Triple M Network.